muddy boots dry by the hearth, weary feet stretching, a pint the prize for 5 miles settles in the moon underwater. I'm Robbie Knox, and I'm the landlord of the Moon Underwater, a mystical place where guests create their dream pub.
Oh, Dan! Dan.
Hello, Robbie.
Dan, how are you? Just having a little hum to myself there. How's things?
Very good, thanks.
What have you been up to this week?
I went duck watching this
week.
Did you? Yeah, it's like bird watching, but just ducks.
Very specific type. And you see any good ones?
Yes, or eight.
Which varieties?
Just
generic ducks.
They're just ducks, yeah. 8 ducks.
Mallards?
Yeah. Drakes.
Right.
Yeah.
And the others?
The others.
Yeah? Oh, that's good. Where was that? Down the estuary?
Yeah.
You're often at the estuary, aren't you?
It's weird I'm the only one that goes down there.
It is a bit strange, yeah. But so be it. Do you know what? I thought you were excellent last night, Dan.
Did you?
Yeah.
Thanks,
at the Moon Underwater Poetry Slam.
Oh, I knew.
You knew. I mean, I was wondering, could you just give us one more quick rendition of your poem? I believe it's called Swimming Pools.
Yeah, it was.
You've really the performance aspect of it was fabulous. I thought you really went for it.
Yep. Okay. Cold knees, knackering, shivering. Feet in dirty water cleaning bowl. Following my friends up the steps and into the cold, cold water. Can I get out yet, Mrs. Hastings? Not yet, Daniel.
Well, it's lost none of its magic.
Thanks, mate.
Thank you. So I'm sorry, I'd love to hear more from you, but who's that striding confidently over to the moon underwater? Speaking of poetry, it's the poet John Cooper Clarke. John, how are you?
Hey, guys. Nice one, Robbie. Dan.
How's
that? That's real poetic, Junior.
Thank you. Thanks, John. That's a huge compliment coming from you. I mean, it was not at all uncomfortable performing poetry in front of you. So glad you liked it. Yeah.
It was fabulous. How's your journey been through the realms here today?
Just across town. I was staying in town last night, overnight, on account of I was launching my new book at the Ethical Society Hall, Conway Hall.
Wonderful. I've never been there. Nice building?
You're beautiful, yeah. Yeah. Yes. You've got some history, that place.
Is it? Wonderful.
I think they've had Gandhi there and George Bernard Shaw and people like this.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. All the big hitters have done their piece at the Conway Hall.
Wonderful. We're here talking pubs. John, are you a fan of pubs?
Well, you know, I'm more of a club guy, I suppose. You know, I've never really... I'll answer that question now, actually. I'm not a beer drinker. And I've never been a beer drinker, and I probably never will be a beer drinker on account of I've never had physically enough room to, let me put it this way, I've never had physically enough room to accommodate the amount of beer that it would take to alter my consciousness in any noticeable way. So I've always gone for the cocktails, you know, the G&T, the rum and coke.
Fabulous.
Ever since I was, you know, an apprentice. But these things were obvious that they were available in public houses.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I did go to them when I was young. But then I quickly started moving towards clubs.
What were your first memories of pubs and clubs then growing up?
I used to go to a pub garden with my dad at a very young age. You know, in the summer months, there was a pub in our neighbourhood called the Priory. And, you know, it was one of those family places where you could sit on the veranda near the bowling green and get a shandy. Mm. So, you know, the usual apprenticeship, northern booze apprenticeship. But like I say, you know, I've always been slightly built. And I've never had, the physical capacity for a great deal of... a pint of anything is beyond me to consume, actually.
It is quite a lot.
I relate to that, John.
Nothing about you.
Yeah, I can't fit... It. That's exactly... You put it into words so perfectly. I out drinking other people, and I just say, well, I can't physically drink that much liquid. It, like you say, it's not. I haven't got the body space for it.
Precisely that. So I've always been a spirits guy. Yeah. Yeah. Drop of wine with my evening meal, But I like a martini at 5:30.
Oh, do you?
Oh, sure. Just to give it that demarcation line between the working day and tea time.
Vodka or gin?
Gin.
Gin. The correct choice, I believe, personally. We're going to get on to picking your drinks and designing your pub. But first of all, Dan, do you want to explain your bell?
If this rings, one of your choices may materialise in front of us. And it's up to you. You can partake in that drink.
You can take it home with you.
Take it home with you.
You can look at it and ignore it. It's entirely up to you.
You can do whatever you want.
That is the magic of the moon underwater.
Oh, it
may. There's no obligation to drink anything or what might be coming. But the option's there.
Okay.
Oh, well, that's nice. Yeah. But it's not often you get to... It's not often they manage to get a martini together in a pub.
Yeah, well, suspect it might not be able to this time either.
But yeah. It's a magical place.
While we're on the subject of beer as well, I might as well tell you that I think I might have been traumatised around it as a child. I was a sick and anemic child. I was forced by my maternal grandma to drink Guinness on a daily basis. Its bitterness was unbearable. But years later in Dublin, however, I was advised by a helpful native to add a measure of Tia Maria.
Oh,
if only I'd known.
There we go. But what age were you this when you were being force-fed Guinness?
It was after I got out of hospital. It was sort of 8.
Yeah.
And was it as medicine, like on a big spoon?
Oh, yeah,
spoon,
it did have that medicinal vibe. Yeah. I guess as a medicine, it kind of worked because people trust medicines that taste awful.
Yeah, yes.
you tell yourself it's got to be this way.
Yeah.
Or it ain't going to work.
You get two choices on draft in your pub, John. What's your first one going to be?
It's not going to be Guinness, yeah.
Oh, none of them would be Guinness, no. The hell, the horror. Although Guinness with a drop of Tia Maria, it really does the trick.
It is nice.
Right about that. It's a sweetener.
Right. So, Guinness, I think, is the most popular drink in the moon underwater that everyone
They've always sold it on a health ticket.
Mm. Yeah.
But I don't know how accurate that is. They do that with sport, don't they? They sell sport on a health ticket, but they're wrong about that.
Yeah.
Sport will wear you out at a very early age. I think they mix it up because you it's not a way to get fit, but you have to be fit in order to do it in the first place. But sport itself will not make you fit.
Yeah.
Footballer, their knees are gone by the time they're 34.
Yeah, any sports person they talk
Absolutely.
About, you know.
George Restless. Foreman. I feel sorry for him with these new cookers they've got out. What's it called? What's it called?
Hot air fryers.
Air fryers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Has that blown George Foreman grill out of the picture?
Yeah, probably because that was the healthy food option before, wasn't it?
Absolutely. I'm worried about the old guy.
Yeah. Well,
I hope he's not on the phone to Don King. You know, fix me something up, will you?
Hopefully he'll bring out some air fryers.
I'm ruined over here.
I remember
George is 78. For Christ's sake.
So what was your first choice on draft, John?
Boddington's Bitter, for sentimental reasons. It's the beer my dad drank. And it's got a unique flavour.
Yeah.
I'll say that for it. If I'm going to drink beer, it's got a very unique flavour.
Very, very Manchester, isn't it?
Yeah.
I'm being very patriotic on that one. And Brewdog gluten-free IPA, in case my wife drops in.
Right. Is it gluten-free?
Yeah.
Yeah. Boddington's, what were your first memories of Boddington's then? Just the drink of your...
Well, my dad's regular place was a Boddington's place, and it was brewed just down the, I mean, I actually lived on the same road as the brewery.
I did. Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah. So a bit further up, a bit further out of town, but yeah, on the same road basically as Boddington's Brewery. So it's hyper local,
yeah.
But also delicious. Well, you know, it is a very unique tasting beer. Nothing like it. They started selling it in France.
Did they?
You know, in Cali, you know, them booze runs.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's cheaper out there, obviously. Yeah. That's why they go and get it there. But I like to think I'm partly responsible for that, because I remember when it was on a bit. My wife's French, and I remember introducing my French side of my family to Boddington's, and they loved it.
So you're,
and they're next door to Belgium, where they've got 1,000 different beers. In fact, there was a boozer in Belgium, in Lille, called the International House of Beers.
Right. And they've got Boddington's.
You're not going to call it the moon under the water.
Yeah.
that's a good second choice, isn't it, really? You know, the International House of Beers. I thought that was good. And then we went to Paris, and there was a place called the Academy of Beers. But then that was before I'd introduced Boddington's to the French.
There we go.
Now it's available in those booze emporia around Cali. You can get it at the knockdown rate.
What kind of academy can it have been without Boddington's? That's the question.
I suppose a lot of research going on there, you know. Yeah. Glug, glug, glug. Yeah.
Dan, what do you know about Boddington's?
Well, it's a couple of
Strange
things.
Strange Ways Brewery.
Yeah, Strange Ways. It's sadly.
I think they've moved.
Yeah, they don't make the cask anymore. They stopped
making
it.
It's going to change. It's going to change. I mean, you know, Kentish hops, water straight out of the Irwell.
Yeah.
What could possibly go wrong?
Did you know, John, 1900, Boddy's was one of the beers. There was a big scandal where 6,000 people were poisoned by arsenic in beer. And Boddington's was one of the beers that was...
you know, that's a bad move. You know, they'll tell you this at any business college. Don't kill the customers. Try not to kill the customers.
Yeah, there was this big thing of, particularly in Manchester, but it was in the Midlands as well. And there were people were going to doctors, and they had skin discoloration and kind of numbness in their hands and feet. And no one could work out what it was. And they thought, initially, most of them were drinkers. So they were saying, oh, I think it's some kind of alcohol poisoning of some description.
Sounds like the Crimson Plapsy to me.
And then one doctor said, these are the symptoms from arsenic. And it turned out that what part of the making of the beer, someone had been selling them.
When was this? The
sugar.
Turn of the century?
Yeah, 1900. Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
No, they weren't very hygiene conscious.
No, exactly.
I don't think the teachings of Louis Pasteur had reached these shores at that point.
So it was, they used to sell a lick
of ice cream. Some guy would stand next to a bucket of water. With a glass, like a cornet, but made out of glass. And he'd kind of scoop, and it was one of those glass things where it looked like you had more in it than you actually had.
Right.
So it was a very new thing, you know, it's around 1906, you know, and you had to be Italian.
Yeah.
But, or they wouldn't buy it off you. So there's lots of fake Italians, you know, Johnny Macaronis that were actually, you know, local guys with a thin moustache. And they would stand next to a bucket of water with a bit of disinfectant in it, perhaps, you know, not really. But they had this cornet that made it give you the illusion you were getting a good portion of ice cream there, you know. And you'd queue, and they would queue up, and he would hold this. He would keep possession of this glass thing, and you'd go up for a penny lick, and you'd lick the ice cream off the thing, and then they'd, don't worry, we're, and they'd swill it out in this bucket with you know, a bit of Dettol in it or something.
Oh,
you know,
my God.
Next. Back in the ice cream, next. Oh. You know, with all these consumptives, you know, kind of before you...
They could have done without health and safety in Boddington's.
You wonder anybody from the Victorian era survived at all. But yeah, that's it. Doesn't surprise me, the arsenic poisoning.
Yeah.
But it didn't put people off. It's a very popular beer even now.
Yeah, great beer.
Like Cadbury's, whoever's putting it out, It actually tastes exactly the same as it did when it came out of Strange Ways Brewery, to be honest. Same as Cadbury's, isn't it? Everybody thought, ooh, crap gel. It'll start tasting like crap cheese or something, you know. Yeah. People are stupid like that sometimes, aren't they? You know what I mean? But it's exactly the same, apart from the portions have been cut down.
Yeah.
All for our own good.
Yeah.
Oh, and it makes it, you know, and it makes you more money. How convenient. You know, if you're looking for a shyster, I'll give you the word to look for, the buzzword now, eco. If it's got eco in front of it,
or
trying to part you from your money for no good reason.
Yeah,
I've got a bug up my arse, I suppose.
And I think markets, you can't even get markets that just rename themselves farmers markets and just double the price of everything.
Big Farmer. I blame him. I blame him.
I hear a lot about him, yeah.
Yeah.
He comes in for a lot of stick, but why not that one?
Why BrewDog gluten-free IPA, John? What's the reason for
my wife, she's gluten-free, intolerant. So just in case she dropped in.
Yeah. Fabulous. Do you like a sort of IPA thing? What I taught you?
Yeah, I don't mind. It's very popular in the States now.
Right. Yeah.
You couldn't get anything like that 10 years ago. No. But now it's, you know, just the hipster thing.
Yeah.
Craft beers, gin lists 1,000 yards long.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that because I've always liked gin, and I like having the choice now. There's a lot of good gin.
Well, like I was saying before, I go for the cheapest. I like Plymouth.
I like Plymouth.
Yeah, I go for the cheap ones. You know, I'm going to mix it with something else anyway. What's the point of getting all connoisseur and up your arse about it? You know, you're going to drown it with Fever Tree tonic water or a dab of martini. You know, you want the bad brands for cocktails, don't you? We were talking about it before, weren't we?
Yeah.
It's a product of prohibition. It was a way of making the poison palatable. You know, with your bathtub gin, that's what they call it.
Yeah.
Bathtub gin made out of potato peel.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're going to have to mix that with something, even if it's only cough medicine.
If you put enough fruit juice with stuff, it can taste nice anyway, whatever it is.
Well, the first thing I got drunk on as an 8-year-old in my friend in the apartment above. His mum and he lived with his mum and his grandma, and who used to go out to the pub on a Saturday night, and I was like his babysitter, even though I was only like 18 months his older than him. So we got up to all kinds of all kinds of tricks. But they had this thing, I'd never seen one before. We didn't have one in our house, you know. My dad didn't drink at home. He was a social drinker. You know, he did like the company of other guys. So, you know, it was all tied up with that. So we didn't have anything in the house. We would have to buy a bottle of VP wine at Christmas, but that was it, you know. And we never had booze in the house. So when I was babysitting this friend of mine, we get up to all sorts there. And I said, what's this? They had this thing, it was like an Aztec temple, this piece of furniture. Looked like an Aztec temple in the corner. I thought, oh, what the hell, full of mirror, you know, mirror tiles. He opened it up, you know, and sliding doors.
Wow.
Revealing a completely mirror-tiled, interior with all these strange bottles of hooch that I'd never laid eyes on before, except there was one that I was familiar with because they used to do adverts for it on the movies, you know, in the movies. And it was called, with the ominously titled, Maldano's Late Night Final. So that's a good night Vienna, in other words. Good night Vienna. You won't be having anything. You won't be having any chasers with this one. So what I suspect it was what you were, you know, with the amalgamated fruit-flavoured alcoholic ingredients.
Yeah.
But it was really quite suitable for a kid because it was, you know, very sweet. But we got right out of order on it, you know. We drank the full bottle between us.
Oh my God. We've had a lot of people on the podcast who have started drinking before 18, but I think 8 might be a new record.
Oh yeah, that's you know, it's anything that you're not supposed to do is attractive at that age. Isn't it? So, but it was the architectural stature of this piece of furniture, the cocktail cabinet, that got me. It was absolutely beautiful. It wasn't Art Deco. It was kind of mid-century, you know, like something you'd find in a bungalow in Las Vegas. so the whole thing had a completely terrific vibe about it. It seemed real glamorous.
It was around the time there's a lot of globe things that were that had spirits in them, weren't they?
That's right. Yeah, I remember that. And there was one on a Fall promotional video for the Fall when Bricks was in the band, and they had a couple of hit records, didn't they, at that point? And they did a great video for it. And they were doing a version of Victoria by the Kinks, you know, one of these cover versions. And it was them. It was her dressed up as Lady Hamilton, and Smithy, Mark Smith, dressed up as Nelson, you know, with the full rig. And they're standing, and in between, they've got one of them antique-looking globes.
Yeah.
You know, the map of the world, you know, on a mahogany stand. You know, like, it had a lot of history behind it, you know. But it was one of them that opened out into a booze cabinet. Great. But it really had that antique finish to it. It was really effective. You know, but I had it rumble right there. That's one of them booze cabinets, Tim Smithy. He never liked to be too far away from a drink. But he made it look glamorous on that. It's a great vid. Check it out.
Yeah, I will.
Victoria. You know the song.
Yeah.
Raymond Douglas Davis.
There we go. The
Great song.
On your travels, John, you must have performed in quite a few pubs and club sort of places over there. Are there any that stand out as particularly good venues for performing poetry?
Are we going back or?
Whenever. Just in general, where's been a particularly good
pub? Well, the last pub I did, actually, in name only, it's a beautiful venue, but it's called Joe's Pub in New York.
Oh, wow. Whereabouts? And Manhattan?
Manhattan. And I did three nights there, I think it was. But it's bigger than a pub. But it's sort of got out a bit like a, you know, it's got a bit of that resonance about it.
Yeah.
And it's a sort of Victorian sort of building as well. I'm not sure it was in Manhattan. Or you have to check that out.
I'll have a look. I'll look it up in my mind.
Could be Brooklyn. I've done a couple in Brooklyn as well, Williamsburg.
Do you spend a lot of time out in
I've been
America?
Going there a lot lately because it's, you know, I couldn't get back in there for 30 years. Long story, I won't go into it, but I've been knocking on, I've been banging on the door for 30 years and, you know, with the help of the police and various pillars of society telling them what a swell guy I am, I managed to get in there again. So I can't keep away from the place. Now, I love America. It's everything brilliant. I love in the world comes from there.
Yeah, I love America. I love New York so much. Joe's Pub is, in fact, in Manhattan. NoHo is the area.
Now I'm thinking, I got it confused with the Williamsburg Music Hall.
That's got a great venue. Yeah, I love that. Yeah.
So I've done that one.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Wonderful.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
You get two bottles or cans, John, in your pub. What are you going to pick?
A bottled Peroni. Or a can of Coca-Cola Classic, no diet, no Pepsi.
Okay. Let's do Peroni first. Why Peroni?
Because it's stylish.
Yeah.
And it's thirst quenching. And you drink it by the glass rather than the pint.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's an elegant looking drink.
Yeah.
I don't know if you remember, John, they've got a kind of a blue ribbon on there.
Nastro Azzurro.
Yeah.
That's right, yeah, and, the blue ribbon. Award-winning.
Yeah.
First quench. I prefer it to Birra Moretti.
Do you?
Yeah, it's more, you know, you could, Peroni, you could give it to a baby. give it to a thirsty baby.
Just put like a rubber thing on the top of the bottle.
Might give it the burps, but you know, they're like that anyway, babies.
No, the blue ribbon.
In fact, it's good that it's good for a baby to burp, isn't it? Enforced burping.
Just helping them along.
Part of the shtick, isn't it, with babies?
Yeah. No, the blue...
Glass of Peroni, you could do away with all that patting on the back stuff.
It's not in the manuals, though. It's not in the manuals, weirdly. The blue ribbon is because that was in honour of the Italian ocean liner, which won the Blue Riband by doing the fastest journey across the Atlantic. So they put it on there, and at that time that record was getting broken sort of almost every year. But
it's a badge of esteem.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so it's nice.
One of those drinks. It could elevate you to the status of a king on earth.
And Coca-Cola, I noticed you had very specific requirements for your Coca-Cola. What have you got against diet?
Well, I'm not on a diet, and and I don't think anybody else should be neither.
No.
And Pepsi?
So, you know, drink less of it.
Yeah.
You know.
Pepsi? You're not having Pepsi?
You can't screw with the formula of the late John Pemberton.
Is that the inventor of
Dr. John Pemberton, manufacturer of America's premier beverage and nerve tonic, brain food, Coca-Cola.
So how much Coca-Cola do you go through in a week, John? Is it every day?
Only one a day, really. Okay. Me and my man Johnny Green, we have even when he's at home and I'm at home, we have this ritual around 11 a.m., whereby the spiel I just gave you there, and then a glass of Coke, and that usually does it. You know, it's the lightning pick me up of the jet age. You know, it sort of gives you that get through the day stuff.
Do you enjoy Coca-Cola, Dan?
It's too sweet for me. I don't drink
sugar. Sure, that's because it's full of delicious sugar.
Yeah.
It's meant to be.
I can't drink it very often. The only time.
Pure energy.
Yeah.
I can't recommend it enough.
It was a very hot day and a very cold Coca-Cola, maybe.
Right.
With a lot of ice.
Yeah. Fair enough. Maybe. What do you know about Coca-Cola, Dan? You've always got a fact for us.
Well, it's the first soft drink in space. That's their claim. They made a special can in...
I'm not surprised about that. They were the first people in space.
Yeah. Well, they made a special can
America's premier beverage.
Yeah.
It's got a half-life of a million years. Or a full life. How does that work out? Yeah, so then does it have a full life of 2 million years? Or is it sort of a man being unscientific?
Oh, I can't remember which way around it goes.
Naive.
Is it? Yeah.
But... so I looked into it because it was their sort of boast that it was the first soft drink in space. It turns out that they started making this can, and then Pepsi for NASA, and then Pepsi heard about it and said, "Well, hang on, we want some of that too."
The devil's brew.
Yeah, so they let Pepsi do it as well. So they both went up in the
Well, I suppose that's shuttle. Democracy for you.
Yeah,
so but both, I tell you what, the ant men are gonna love Coca-Cola.
Yeah.
When they get to Mars, when they finally get to Mars. The ant men are going to go crazy.
Well, they love sugar, don't they? The ants.
Yeah, so, crazy about it.
Yeah. Exactly. John, do you like a pub quiz?
Yeah, I like a pub quiz. Yeah, sure.
Well, that's great news because, Dan, you have a pub quiz.
Okay, phones away, put a gag on Siri, it's quiz time. Elvis's black belt was in karate. I saw it on QI. No half points for saying J.K. Rowling is the lead singer of Jamiroquai.
Moira Stewart.
No, I'm afraid it was Gordon Honeycomb.
Yeah, we have a pub quiz on the show. And the way it works is that I'm going to ask three questions. But don't answer them.
All right.
Have a think. We'll have a short break and then we'll come back for the second half of the podcast and we'll.
Okay, well,
we'll
I tell you, I am on a pub quiz team, but it's very occasional.
Okay.
We got a lodger, his name's Al Mullins. He's very much involved in the bird watching, actually.
Okay.
I bet he's seen more ducks than you have, actually.
He probably has, yeah.
Not being funny, but he's put the hours in. But this guy...
That is very much a fair weather bird watcher.
Yeah. This guy,
I tell you, he's a genius. Every home should have a lodger like Alf Mullins. He is a total genius, a mathematical... You know, he compiles arcane crosswords that you wouldn't even understand the question. why am I bringing him up? Oh, yeah, I'm on hit. That's it.
Well, he sounds like a great...
I'm on his...
Yeah.
Pub quiz team. Him and another genius. But they've got me along.
Music?
Show business.
Yeah. Perfect.
Showbiz. Movies. You know.
Yeah.
And fashion.
Team name?
You know, all those pussy subjects that a scientist wouldn't be giving any consideration to.
That's the secret to a good pub quiz team, though. It's diversity.
You've got to be strong where the other guy's weak and the other way around. Sure, yeah. That's why it's a team, not just... You know, one guy.
And have you got a pub quiz name, regular name?
Do you know, I can't remember what it is. There is, but it's a very occasional thing, I've got to say, because I'm, you know, working a lot of the time. But they've got to stand in for me. I'm not indispensable. not with these two eggheads.
Well, John, what I thought I'd do, the last book before your one that you're about to release... The Luckiest Guy Alive, also a great poem, a titular poem.
Oh, thanks.
Well.
Yeah, I like that one myself.
I mean, a great line about farting through silk on the second line.
Oh, it's great. It's translated from the French. It's a well-known French
saying.
Is it?
Yeah, that's brilliant.
I can't remember what it is exactly in French. I'll have to ask my wife. But it was her that sort of told me that one. I thought, wow, what a fabulous...
That is great.
Yeah, yeah. Sounds better in French, actually.
Yeah, but it's got a charm in English.
Yeah, I suppose so.
So anyway, I was thinking about this Luckiest Guy Alive, and I thought, what about a little general knowledge quiz about luck?
All right.
Okay. So I'm going to do three questions. Don't answer. Have a think. We'll do the answers.
And do I write them down?
Yeah.
And the way this
I'll
works,
repeat them in the second half, John. So right.
The way this works, I don't know the answers either, so I will also do the quiz so you have
some
you're
in
kind
competition.
Of... A friendly competition.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay, question one. In China, the number 4 is seen as unlucky because it sounds like the word for death. But what single-digit number is considered lucky because it sounds like the word for wealth?
Wealth.
Wealth. Mm. Question one. Question two. What is triskaidekaphobia?
Oh,
triskaidekaphobia.
I knew this.
And question...
I only found out this week.
You might be able to work it out. And question three. In the Caribbean, what is it supposed to mean if you have an itchy palm? Have a think.
I know that one.
Okay.
Well, we'll have a little think there.
Shall I give you, just before we go, a very quick luck fact?
Please do.
In Turkey, it's a superstition that if you chew gum after dark, it turns into the flesh of the dead.
What's that going to do with luck?
Well, it's a superstition. Luck, superstition.
Wow.
Luck is a superstition.
There's that one in
it. Bad luck to eating it off.
There's that one that people used to always say to their daughters, you know... every time you have sex out without being married, an angel dies in heaven.
There we go. Food for thought.
Bleak.
I believe it's a bit of case. I'm putting the message out there.
It's time now to leave.
As a doctor. Hey, while I'm on the subject of sexual hygiene.
Yeah.
As a doctor, I wouldn't recommend circumcision. I knew one guy had it done when he was 3 days old. After that, he didn't walk for 2 years.
On that bombshell, it is time to leave those of you who do not support The Moon Underwater on Patreon. If you'd like to subscribe, you can head to moonunderpod.com and sign up to get...
What's the point of having a doctor here if I'm not going to give out good advice?
To get ad-free extended episodes a day early, a monthly bonus podcast, access to the Moon Underwater Social Club on Facebook, and early access to live tickets. We'll see you soon in part two, where we'll continue creating John's dream pub.